All right, we're back now with old friend Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith. And Chief, so glad to be talking with you. Wish it were better circumstances. How are you?
I'm good. I would definitely prefer it to be better circumstances, and face-to-face would be great. But as we know, the social distancing rules have changed things up a little bit, so we'll do it the technology way.
Well, tonight we're going to talk basically about the firehouse situation, if I may, and then hopefully at some point I'll talk with the assistant chief, who is the crisis management director in Gloucester. That can be at a later date. But Chief, in terms of staffing, has anything changed with respect to this emergency?
It has, and like any kind of large scale. Issue. Fortunately, at this moment in time, we're not being overrun with EMS calls, which is, thank God. We do expect that to pick up, and that the severity of cases and acuity of patients will probably increase, and it's going to take more time. The calls themselves take more time because of when you're dealing with folks who have a communicable disease, and as virulent as this one appears to be, with on its face, without a lot of scientific evidence, out of an abundance of caution, everybody's got to wear the proper PPE with personal protective equipment. So we have added one additional rescue. We do own four machines in the city, so we always have two stood up out of the main station. We do own two backups, because inevitably in the mechanical world something is broken, and on occasion, two things are broken, and during the summer months when things are, normal, we have a lot of events in town, and we stand up a third squad that these events pay for the staffing to come out when it's appropriate and necessary. So we've stood that third truck up already and positioned it out in West Gloucester. We're positioned to stand up another truck and put that out in Bayview, as well as enhance the staffing on the engines and the ladder truck. To some degree, because this it gets to be a little bit manpower intensive, and we're looking to have at least 4 to 5 people showing up on each of these calls as much as we can, to ensure that we have somebody that's doing all the right things, an incident commander who's also the safety officer, so everybody's getting an eye on them to make sure that their PP is on and it is on correctly, and that when we're coming out of the house, if we don't transport, or when we're leaving the hospital, that everybody is doing all the right things to contain any contamination that we've encountered, and that we're protecting our employees and making sure that we're not only wearing the right equipment, but taking it off the right way, and then decontaminating our vehicles, as well as all the personnel that were on the call. Get out of those clothes, launder those clothes, have a shower. These are typical things that the fire service does, after every fire call, because of the contamination that you run into and smoke and toxins in that environment. So this is much like that, or any kind of, hazardous materials call, where you're wearing specialized equipment to protect you from the hazard, and then when you take it off out of an abundance of caution, you go the extra mile and wash the clothes, wash yourself, and get everything all cleaned up and back in service. So it is taking more time. If the intensity and tempo of the calls pick up, then that will become, a challenge for us to try to go through every single phase and step that we put in place now to protect the employees. And so there may be those instances where we're doing a quick decon at the hospital and getting out of the gear that was contaminated and into a new set and responding immediately from there. The truck is going to have to get a quick decon. So to be able to turn a vehicle around after we put a patient in there, because the next call might not be for a patient with COVID, and the last call may not have been a confirmed COVID patient. So, we're working with a lack of information and a communicable disease. So, our posture is that every patient may have COVID, act accordingly. And in between every call, we're always deconning our vehicles. It's just the nature of the business and standard practice. And in these cases, with it maybe something with patients that are coughing and aerosolization, it's an even more intensive cleaning process. Takes more people to get it done, especially if you're trying to do it quickly and get to the next patient. to make sure that the environment that we're putting that next patient in is appropriate and that it's clean and that there isn't a risk that we could cross-contaminate them. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are a bit different but very similar to what we do every day. It's just obviously a higher risk for our personnel, as everybody's seen in the news and the media, how this thing works and the risk that it poses for healthcare workers and, you know, EMTs and paramedics and firefighters and police out on the front line of this thing are right in the line of fire, literally. So it's a lot of the same, but much more intense and yet another risk elevation that we have to assess and manage.
Do you estimate that you have the gear that you need?
We do. I mean, there's certainly, you know, the unknown as to how many patients are we going to get and how much are we going to burn through. Right now, you know, and I totally understand why our numbers are where they're at. Call volume is, if anything, slightly lower than what is normal, because folks that would normally call us looking for assistance and you know, for us to take care of lesser acute issues and get them to the hospital are opting to, you know, use telehealth and telemedicine and, you know, get in contact with their primary care physicians and really trying to abide by the guidance out there in a medical community that is, listen, if we can take care of you over the phone and keep you home and safe and distanced from others and not bring you into the hospital, that's better in many ways. We don't risk you getting exposed to something in a cross contamination or environmental situation, but we also are leaving those and staff available for what we know is probably coming, what we're seeing happening in New York and other areas that are, you know, what they say are, you know, they're a week in front of us or 5 days, 10 days in front of us on dealing with this, that they, you know, it got to them first and they've already ramped up and, you know, they were kind of next in line as this thing moves around. So, you know, we're in that position now where we are not at our peak. We don't know exactly when that peak will be. We don't know to what degree it's going to affect us, as in the total volume of patients and calls to address. So, you know, we're, you know, optimistic and hopeful that that we're as prepared as we can be, and we'll know when the time comes if we are as prepared as we think we are.
A couple of more questions, Chief. Communications with you and the state, or with you and other firehouses around the North Shore, is that an ongoing thing?
Yeah, there's, you know, we're involved in a lot of statewide conference calls, both Assistant Chief Aiello and I, and many others within the city, based on their specialization and what they do. You know, from our financial folks to our business community representatives and liaisons. So there, you know, there's a lot of pieces to this that everyone's seeing, with unemployment benefits and SBA loans, and so there's a lot of compartmentalization and specialization into those areas and those, you know, folks within our administration and staff and the mayor's office and in the, you know, communications that she's having up at the higher levels that trickle down and then spread out to us at our level. So we have routine, you know, meetings with emergency management at the state level that are specific to police, fire, EMS, because of obviously the things that are most important to us are going to be different than the things that are most important to, you know, community development and planning and the things they're trying to help the business community through, and as well as schools and so forth. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on all at once. I think, you know, city staff, the mayor's office, certainly, you know, my opinion of where the fire department, the police department are at, everybody seems to be right on point and doing their jobs extremely well under fairly difficult circumstances, and with offices being in large part closed and with staffing reduced to the bare minimum, and, you know, in an effort to do the same thing that we're telling everybody else to do. I mean, we have to try to maintain that social distancing as well and stop the spread of this thing so we can get it under control and stamp it out.
talking with the chief of the Gloucester Fire Department, Eric Smith. And finally, Chief, in terms of the firehouses themselves, where your men are quartered from time to time, they're in close quarters. What has changed in each of the facilities in terms of protecting the men and how they relate to one another?
Yep, so that is definitely a challenge. You've been in all of our firehouses, I think, and certainly the outskirts stations, as we call them, in the West Gloucester, Bayview, Magnolia, their staffing levels aren't as high as downtown. They're running typically one engine out of those stations, although we are running an engine and a rescue out of West Gloucester right now, so that staffing complement has gone up. But those stations are designed to house anywhere from 4 to 6 people, and we can do that and meet those social distancing needs with the space that's in the building. Obviously, once you get in a truck, you're probably closer than 6 feet away from each other face to face, and that's why we are so stringent on what we're doing in the firehouse. Every station and every firefighter is supposed to be monitoring their temperatures when they're off duty and their health when they're off duty. We have pounded the message into everyone on the city staff, and especially those that have this elevated risk here in the firehouse, just because of proximity in the building and direct exposure to patients that are really sick with this thing. It's critically important that we monitor everyone's health closely, and if anybody's starting to show any signs or symptoms, that they're out of the game. They need to stay home, get the appropriate health care, and so we're taking it very seriously. Temperatures at home, making sure that if you're getting elevated, you got to call in and put yourself out sick. If it shows that it looks like it might be a COVID case, not just my allergies are up or I got a cold, then that is handled a little differently on what we're doing, because we know our folks have an exposure potential here at work, and that if they're getting sick, it very well likely be something in the exposure here, and we just don't know enough about the virus with this 2 to 14 days of incubation time before you show signs and symptoms. It's possible to get somebody in the station working together that may have it and doesn't know it yet, and can potentially spread that to others. So we're doing everything we can that's humanly possible. We're checking temperatures when people come into work before they even really get in the building. When they come in the front door, they got to check their temperature and make sure that they're reporting that to their officers that, yep, I don't have a temp and I don't have any signs or symptoms of COVID. I'm good to go. And we're checking those routinely throughout the day to make sure that nothing's changed, because this thing can start to develop on you mid-shift. And if it does, you got to go home, and then we need to take the appropriate steps to look after anybody else that you might have been around and determine if they should go home as well as a potential additional exposure. Set up testing, get you home, get you quarantined, the daily monitoring. So this is a whole different level that we've never, ever really dealt with in our circumstance, and it's every day. I mean, this is the new normal that we're operating under. So it's definitely a challenge. It's putting a lot more stress on folks than we would like to see. So we're, looking at ways to try to keep their minds occupied doing other things. But unfortunately, there's, lots of policy procedure. It's all new. There isn't a whole lot that's been written specific to this issue, but we're applying a lot of the techniques and training and ways that we handle isolation and mitigation and separation of people from hazards in this instance as well. And I think it's going pretty well, and I've got a lot of smart people that have really helped a lot in getting our policy procedures crafted. And as we get through this thing, we'll have a lot of lessons learned, and we'll fix whatever mistakes we've been making, and we'll capitalize on the things that we did well and share it with others. So we're better prepared if and when this thing resurges or comes back. We just don't know. So it's kind of a new normal.
Lord knows we need you guys, Chief. Is there anything else that I didn't ask about that maybe you might want to mention?
No, I think we're in pretty good shape. We've had some smart people and a lot of great employees here that have put forward a lot of these issues way back with H1N1. So we're not in the best of shape, I would say, with N95s, the masks that we wear as healthcare providers, and surgical masks and gloves. But we are not in horrible shape. I mean, there are certainly people out there that are not nearly as fortunate. And I guess really the word is prepared and prepared in advance and have the stock on hand as we have been. And so, you know, our department is kind of leading the charge on providing all the PPE throughout the city for all the healthcare workers that work for the city, the police department, you know, over Board of Health, as well as a lot of the social service agencies that are really on the front line as well, Meals on Wheels folks. And, you know, people at Open Door that are serving food and getting people groceries, these people are incredible, and I can't thank them enough because what they're doing and how they're helping people socially distance is a direct impact on the services that are demanded out of this fire department if we can slow the spread. And I think what they're doing is stellar work, and I can't thank them enough, and we're right in there with them. We have a meeting with them twice a week with everybody on a big conference call. You know, our incident commander on this is Karen Carroll and the staff over at the Board of Health. And we're, you know, even though we're kind of on the front lines of dealing with the patients, they are definitely the lead element because this is a Board of Health issue. This is a public health issue. And a lot of this falls right into their wheelhouse. And she and her staff are doing great work with the nurses and folks that they have working over there to track the people that have cases and keep everybody on the right page and the messaging behind the health aspect of this and the command and control. They're doing a great job. So we're glad to be here to help support that and to deal with folks as they get sick. And, you know, and we're doing our part to help with the PPE and hand sanitizer and mask, gloves, and all that to everybody that we can get them to that has a need. So we've done pretty well in prioritizing that. And I don't think anybody that's had a need has gone unfilled, which is actually incredible when you look at some of the stories across the country and even as close as in Boston with some of the hospitals and what they're going through. You know, it's tough times for a lot of folks out there, and we are very, very fortunate with where we're positioned.
All righty, that is Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.